I'm talking this morning on the opportunity of worship, which is much easier when the sound works and the keyboard doesn't cut out during worship. But I'm going to start off in Romans 6:23. You know, we don't have to worry about putting the scriptures up unless they're already in there. But Romans 23 says, "For the wages of sin is death, but the gift of God is eternal life." 1 Peter 4:10 through 11, the New Living Translation says this, "God has given each of you a gift from his great variety of spiritual gifts. Use them well to serve one another. Do you have the gift of speaking? Then speak as though God himself were speaking through you. Do you have the gift of helping others? Do it with all the strength and energy that God supplies. Then everything you do will bring glory to God through Jesus Christ." And Psalm 127:3 says, "Children are a gift from the Lord. They are a reward from him." So I wanted to share those three scriptures because they all talk about the gifts that God gives. Let me read Psalm again. Psalm says, "Children are a gift from the Lord. They are a reward from him." I know we have a lot of grandparents or people that have grown children, and I'm sure many of you would agree with that. Those of us that have younger kids, we're like, where's the gift receipt, right? There's those times that we're just so stressed out and we're so fed up with all the little antics. It's like, man, this whole parenting thing is just tough. But they are gifts that God gives us. But it doesn't always necessarily mean that gifts are an easy thing, right? God gives us children, but it's required of us to raise them, to teach them, to develop them into the adults that they're going to be. If we were just given the end result, then it would be really easy. God would just give it to us. Here's the gift, the end result, and it's done. But it's a process. It's an 18, 20, 25, failure to launch 30-year process before some people reach that finished gift, right? So let me put it a different way. T.D. Jakes says that God gives us an opportunity, and what we do with that opportunity is our gift back to God. God gives the opportunity. What you do with it is your gift back to God. You see, some of us are programmed in a way that you get a job, you go to work for your 8 hours, you come home, you do your thing, and you're satisfied, which is completely fine. Paul writes in Philippians, he says in Philippians 4:11, "I'm not saying this because I'm in need, for I've learned to be content with whatever the circumstances." God calls us to be content. "I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want." But we know that God takes us through different seasons. We know that, you know, a lot of us are like Paul's, and we can be satisfied in situations and satisfied with what we have. But then there's others that like to wrestle and grapple and explore and push for more, right? How many salespeople do we have? I know we have a few. So we got some salespeople in the room. Salespeople are wired very, very differently, right? They go into a situation, you know, they go into a meeting to finalize a sale. And a content person would just be focused on that sale. But every single person that is in sales is thinking about the next opportunity, right? They're thinking about what networking opportunities they'll have in that meeting to move on to the next sale. Because they know that the whole sales process isn't contingent just on that one sale. It's what comes next and next and next and next and next. And they're always looking for those opportunities. So by definition, I guess that would be somewhat of an entrepreneur. Abraham, way back in the early days in Genesis, was very much an entrepreneur. It says in the Bible in Genesis that he had fields of livestock. And he had not only his own livestock, but he had many different herdsmen that managed different livestock for him. And they were spread all over the land. So instead of just jumping into an opportunity, I believe that we're supposed to look and see what that opportunity can do for us, what it can grow into. God didn't make this stool, right? I asked Todd to bring in some of these beautiful creations that he's been making. Anybody seen these on Facebook? Pensations? You got to check them out. This beautiful wooden pen started out as a tree, as a block of wood. He takes these blank pieces of wood and turns them into something absolutely incredible. God created the tree in order to create the pen. God created the tree in order to create this stool. God created the trees to build these walls. But Gil Lancia built the walls, right? He gives us the creativity, the knowledge, the understanding on how to do those things, right? So whenever we're given something, whenever God creates something, he's not just going to give us the end result. He's going to require of us to use our own understanding, our own knowledge, our own entrepreneurial spirit to look and vision and have the passion to know what those things can become. Does that make sense? Everybody with me? So we're going to take a hard left turn. Hang on. I promise we'll bring it all together, though. So the title of the message is The Opportunity of Worship. So congregational singing, why is it so important? You know, we spend the first half an hour almost of every service just singing as a congregation. And just as home entertainment has kind of morphed from family and neighborhood sing-alongs, you know, it's we all see the videos of the old black and white Bing Crosby stuff, and everybody's gathered around the family piano and singing Christmas songs, and now it's Justin Bieber and Drummer Boy, right? Those things have changed a little bit. And it's not really the way that it used to be. I mean, congregational singing used to be a single organ, a single piano, and everyone opening the hymn book and actually reading music. So what I thought we'd do today is I'd hand out music, and everybody can read their part, and we'll sing four-part harmony. Cool. That sound good? That probably wouldn't go over too well, right? The culture has shifted. The culture has changed. And you see, you know, many of the much larger churches, worship and congregational singing has turned into this big, full-scale production. We were just talking this morning in the sound booth. One of our financial board members came up and said, you know, what can we do to improve the quality of the Facebook video that we put out, Facebook Live every week? You know, and it gets into this whole production thing, you know, lots and lots of money of cameras and live streaming and different things like that. You know, I've been to big churches where whenever the lights dim down, the fog machines kick up, you know, there's all kinds of dramatic music and, you know, it turns into production rather than what it once was. And I'm not saying it's wrong by any means. You know, I very much enjoyed those opportunities and been ministered to in those opportunities, but it's much different from where it was even 30 or 40 years ago. So singing is a privilege. It's really a foretaste of heaven. Because the Bible tells us that in one day, in the future, every tribe, every language, every nation, and every people will sing as a congregation before the throne of God. Until then, we're just kind of this little tiny piece, day to day, that is kind of unimpressive singing. Although God delights every time that we sing and every time that we engage in worship. So as we anticipate, you know, those things that will come one day, the extent of that is really the importance of what we need to focus on. So because every good sermon has 3 points, I'm going to start now with my 3 points. So if Pastor Ken asks, you can report back to him that the sermon did indeed have 3 separate points. So number one, congregational singing affects us as individuals. It's probably the single most important part of why we worship, why we sing together as a congregation. A few months ago, longer than that, maybe last year, I did the sermon on the individuals coming into the temple to worship, right? It's referred to in the Bible as the throng. Not the thong, the throng, right? A gathering of people is the throng. And as they come into the temple, they come in one door and they exit out another door. And there's significance in that. And the reason that the temple was set up that way is so that the people would understand that you may go in the first door a certain way. You may go in the first door with baggage and stress and issues and sickness and all of those things. But by the time you come out the rear door and you've proceeded through the temple and you've been engaged in the worship process and you've been hearing the music and you've been singing and you're hearing the word and you've been in the presence of God, when you come out that next door and exit the temple, you're changed, right? You're not to enter the temple and remain the same and then leave. That's not God's desire. His desire is that we come into church, we're changed, and then we're sent back out. That's why we have church. So congregational singing affecting us as individuals. So today's society is full of depression, addiction, self-worth, confusion. Families are shattering, suicide rates are at all-time high, and sense of global turmoil continues to endure. Amid all of that, it's only when we worship that we put God in his rightful spot, engaging him with our mind, body, and spirit. We cannot rise above the world's circumstances until we turn our eyes on the one that is higher than ourselves. We proclaim in congregational worship that sometimes it seems impossible to proclaim in our natural selves. We cannot rise above the world's difficulties until we turn our eyes on the one that is higher. Point number two. Congregational singing affects our community. And our community is a lot of different things. You know, our community can be the community within the church. It can be the community outside of the church. It can be the community of the fellowship of multiple churches. But it affects us as a community. What it does for us as individuals ripples out from this place. The Apostle Paul often encouraged the early church towards authentic worship. And he told the new Christians to encourage one another in psalms, in hymns, and in spiritual songs. It says that in Ephesians 5:19. In other words, when we sing, we're reminding each other of eternal truths and therefore developing a lasting spiritual bond between each other. We're not merely just singing, we're singing to one another. Number three, congregational singing reaches the nations. So imagine that our singing together, what it sounds like from the perspective of God. It says that God is delighted whenever we sing, right? We're actually joining with many, many, many different churches across the world every Sunday morning whenever we come together and we sing in this place. And there's actually the third Sunday in May, there's been this large Facebook kind of movement to get a whole bunch of congregations to sing the same worship songs at the same time, right? So we're going to do our best to participate in that. But the idea is to have, you know, thousands of different churches around the world singing the same worship songs at the same time, which is pretty cool. So imagine that what our singing sounds like from that perspective. The nations see us from people singing together passionately. They see communities of desperate individuals joining together, men and women who wouldn't necessarily golf together in the same country club or hang out together outside of church are coming together in this place and worshiping with one another. And yet they're joined together, singing to one another. There's a very unique melody and sound within each individual church. And this is something we've talked about in the past. You know, you could come into this place and hear a song, and the same exact song could be done at the Presbyterian church up the street, and it's going to sound completely different, you know, not just from a natural standpoint of different instrumentation and different vocalists and things like that, but just because each church has its own unique sound. When we're joined together and singing to one another, there's that uniqueness. And from those who visit churches or, you know, our children, or those that may hear you sitting in traffic listening to Caleb and singing, you know, there's always that unique sound that comes from worship. And it's not something that is necessarily palpable, you know. It's one of those things that whenever worship music is heard, it just has that anointing, that presence of God. And those that are into music, I mean, you can find yourself, you know, just listening to a song, and you start tapping your foot, or you start moving to the music, and it's because God has given that gift inside of you to respond to music. God created music. The opportunity is the music that he created. What we do with it is up to us. Do I have the Michael W. Smith video up? An Internet Explorer? If you can drag that over and play it, that would be awesome. We'll just play the first few minutes of it. So, Michael W. Smith right now is in Israel, and he's doing a tour. And it's kind of an informal thing, which I think is so cool. But anyway, he's doing this tour right now, and it's, you know, Michael W. Smith is the type of guy that fills stadiums, right? He goes around and does tours and does these all really mega type of things. But there's this video, if we can get it up, of him in just a small church. It's actually a church that faces the Sea of Galilee. And it's small. I mean, there might be 100, 150 people there. But the church faces the sea, and the windows are wide open behind it. Yeah, here it is. Go turn that up. Yep. So the sanctuary is that way. This is just a raw video of they shot what they're doing. There's this just really cool atrium where they're starting off the worship. We're going to have to turn it up some. Crank it up, Paul.
Thank you.
That's the Sea of Galilee in the background through the windows. Pretty amazing. So here's a guy that both, you know, in the secular world and in Christian music has just been incredibly successful. Fills stadiums all over the world all the time, and he's just hanging out in Israel right now with a couple hundred people having church. Pretty neat. So to bring this all together, and I'm going to ask the worship team to come back up. So we're going to end with a song. Every Sunday we enter this building and we are presented with an opportunity to worship, to sing together as a congregation. And it's so easy to be satisfied. It's so easy just to remain content, to listen to the music and the word, and every once in a while, maybe, you know, get some goosebumps. But other than that, just kind of go through the motions. But where's the passion and the desire? Where's that entrepreneurial spirit within worship and within your relationship with God or your walk of faith? I want to pursue the next opportunity. And I think that's, you know, what we've been hearing a lot from Pastor Ken lately. You know, as him and I talk about things and we talk about the opportunities and the potential and the things that are next, you know, this isn't the last stop for us. You know, the church spent several years over in Pleasant Hills, and you know, we've been here now for nine years, and this isn't the end. You know, the preschool's thriving, Sunday school is busting at the seams downstairs. You know, we have space, and we're going to do it this summer, we have space to do one more classroom, and that's it. So next school year, we're kind of in trouble, right? Because we're going to be absolutely, completely maxed. For those of you that weren't aware, you know, 2 years ago, we ripped out the storage room and one of the bathrooms downstairs to make another classroom. And we're hitting cinder block wall now. You know, there's just, we're completely maxed, especially whenever it comes to the kids. For those of you that were here Easter Sunday, it was standing room only, not only, you know, in the back, but all over the place. And we had over 260 chairs put out for Easter Sunday. So our desire is not just to remain the way things have been and where they're at. We want to continue to push forward and see what God has. So I want to end with a song. Since we haven't done enough of this song over the past month, we're going to do Fight My Battles, because I know it's everybody's favorite. But I just want you to think about the opportunity of worship and what, you know, what we talked about today, and not being content in where you're at, right? You're welcome to remain seated. You're welcome to stand. But as we sing this song, I just want to encourage you to really go after that next thing with God before we close.